meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson is excused. Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr. Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney present.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Representative Haley.
Haley present.
Representative Cagle. Representative Cagle. Representative Lee.
Present.
Oh, thank you. Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly is excused. Representative Lislegard. Representative Lislegard. Representative Lucero.
Lucero present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr. Representative Farr.
Farr present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative Barr.
Barr present.
Representative Lislegard.
Members, we have a quorum. Thank you. may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 25th, 2022?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney moves approval of the minutes for March 25th, 2022. Members, any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 25th, 2022 are approved and adopted. First on the agenda today, members, we have House File 1829. Representative Herr is with us. I will move House File 1829 to be recommended to be placed on the general register. And I will also move the A1 amendments to get the bill in the shape that the author would like it considered. Members, any discussion to Representative Herr's A1 amendments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Herr to House File 1829 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, for hearing House File 1829. I did just want to talk really quickly about just the A2 author's amendment, just so that people are aware what was in the amendment, that we took out the word health insurance because the Affordable Care Act already provides protection for that. And then we also removed just the last paragraph because this is something that already can't be undone. And so I just wanted to share that, make sure people felt comfortable with that amendment that went through. And so, Madam Chair, I wanted to just say thank you for hearing this bill. This bill is extremely personal for me. So I have a kidney disease. I've had it since I was 16 years old, and I've been able to manage my health in a way that has staved off kidney failure. I go in for lab work every 6 months. That used to be quarterly, and at one point it was actually monthly. I see my doctors yearly unless I get sick, and then I go in more frequently to monitor my kidney function. But despite my diligence, I know that one day I will need dialysis and eventually a kidney transplant. I only have 50% function in both kidneys, so I know that this is an inevitable path for me. Chronic kidney disease is one of the most underrecognized public health issues of our time, affecting 1 in 7 adults. With the rise in diabetes and high blood pressure, which are the two leading causes of kidney disease, more and more Minnesotans are impacted by this disease, but the majority are unaware that they have it until it's reached end stage. There is no cure for kidney disease. The only option are dialysis and transplant. Receiving a transplant from a living donor is considered the gold standard treatment and not only provides better outcomes for the recipient, but it also helps reduce the wait time for others on kidney wait lists from deceased donors. House File 1829 provides insurance protection for living donors so that they do not suffer economic loss for helping save another's life. Removing barriers to donations can result in more people being able to donate. This bill will reduce government spend nearly $60,000 annually per patient who no longer need dialysis as a result of receiving a transplant, while also vastly improving quality of life. We must protect our heroes, living donors, who have selfishly given the gift of life by donating their kidney. Some donors have faced discrimination obtaining or affording life, disability, or long-term care in the form of higher premiums or non-coverage based solely on their status as a living donor. In a 2015 study by Johns Hopkins University, 1,046 kidney transplant patients of 186 donors who changed or initiated life insurance after donation, 25% reported difficulty obtaining their desired coverage. 12% were denied altogether, 15% were charged a higher premium, and 9% were told that they had a pre-existing condition because they were kidney donors. To donate an organ, living donors must meet strict health standards and are often in better health than the general public. This bill, which is strongly supported by the National Kidney Foundation and Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, has been passed in 20 states and is awaiting signature in four more. Madam Chair, that is the end of my introduction, and I do have a testifier here today. So if, with your permission, I would like to allow that testifier the time to speak at this time.
Thank you, Representative Herr. We have two testifiers on the list. First up, Mallory Olson. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, this is Jen Anderson from the National Kidney Foundation. I believe we just have myself testifying in support
Thank
of
you.
House File 1829.
Thank you, no Ms. Problem. Anderson. Feel free to proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your time today, and Representative Herr for carrying House File 1829. My name is Jen Anderson, and I'm a kidney donor, the board chair for the National Kidney Foundation, serving Minnesota, and vice president at Alliant Insurance Services, an employee benefits consulting firm. Since my kidney donation in 1999, I've spoken to countless potential kidney donors about the process and what impact donating has on their lives. Every time I speak to a potential kidney donor, they ultimately ask me about any kind of adverse consequences they may face obtaining life, disability, and long-term care insurance. This bill will eliminate barriers from obtaining insurance for potential donors and ultimately increase the number of living donors. As you've heard, the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council supports this legislation because being an organ donor has no long-term impact on one's insurability. This bill has also significant positive financial impact for employers and Medicare. In 2018, one-fifth of Medicare spend was attributed to treating chronic kidney disease. The average preemptive kidney transplant saves over $450,000 in medical expenses. By reducing barriers kidney donors face, we can increase the number of living donors and reduce healthcare spend for private employers and Medicare. I'd like to ask you for your support with House File 1829, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Members, we will move to discussion and questions. There is any, I'm not seeing any hands raised quite yet, so I'll give it a moment. All right, Representative Herr.
Madam Chair.
Simon.
It appears we moved the wrong amendment. We need to have a second motion to move the A2 amendment instead of the A1 amendment.
Thank you for that correction, Simon. Members, I will move the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A2? Okay. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lucero. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, did we vote on the A1 amendment?
Yes, we adopted the A1 amendment prior to Representative Herr's presentation.
So, Madam Chair, do you need a motion to reconsider the vote on the A1 amendment?
I believe that is the case.
Chair and members, Laurie Pompu, House Research, there is no A1. There is just an A2, so I don't think we have to redo any vote.
All righty then.
Thank you, Ms. Pompu. So just for,
thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, I moved an A1 that doesn't exist. We added it to the bill. It doesn't make any changes because there isn't one. We have now moved and approved the A2 amendment. So the bill is in the shape that Representative Herr would like. And if there is no further discussion to the bill as now amended, I will let Representative Herr have final comments. Go ahead, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing the bill today. I really appreciate the time. I think that this is an issue that very few people are aware of, and they don't, where we often don't hear the stories of those who've given their kidney and the experiences that they had afterwards and the impact it has on them, not their own personal health, but the discrimination they may feel in obtaining health insurance or benefits that we all take sort of for granted. So I just really appreciate the committee's time, and I hope that you will all consider supporting this bill. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Representative Herr, for sharing your experience with us and for bringing this bill forward. Members, thank you for your patience and for your assistance as we figured out that amendment snafu. And I will renew my motion that House File 1829, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson is excused. Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Barr.
Barr, no.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley. Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly is excused. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Representative O'Driscoll. And Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye.
There being 13 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails, and the House File 1829, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the general register. Now I will hand the virtual gavel to Representative Carlson, as the next bill up is mine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next bill before us is House File 4394. Representative Cotiza Watoon, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Yes, I would move House File 4394 to be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Representative Cotiza Watoon moves House File 4394 to be recommended to be placed on the general register. Representative, I see you have a author's A1 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do have an A1 amendment. I'm certain it's the A1 this time.
I double-checked as well.
I would like to move that amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like. It does. It covers essentially the last round of negotiations between the industry and the Department of Commerce.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Cotiza Watoon. Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? All right, members, if you could please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. The amendment, the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Cotiza Watoon, to your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, back in 2013, Minnesota enacted some of the strongest annuity sales protections in the country. House File 4394 retains those protections, particularly those specifically geared toward protecting seniors, while increasing transparency and accountability in the annuity sales process. House File 4394 enhances consumer protections for annuity purchasers by incorporating the NAIC's best interest standard revisions into Minnesota law. In order to meet this new best interest standard, a producer must satisfy 4 conduct obligations. The 4 obligations are a care obligation, disclosure obligation, conflicts of interest obligation, and finally a documentation obligation. This bill is supported by insurers, insurance agents, and the Department of Commerce. As I mentioned, that A1 amendment is the result of that last round of negotiations. I have Robin Rowan with me today with the MIFSC, and she will walk through the bill and provide additional detail on those four conduct obligations, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Rowan, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Rowan, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. First, I would like to thank Vice Chair Kachiza Watum for taking on an annuity bill. Not everyone will. And the Department of Commerce for all the time they've spent collaborating with us since late last fall. So current law requires that insurers and agents can only recommend an annuity if the annuity is suitable based on the consumer's current financial situation. And while that standard has served consumers well, the industry and the regulatory community agreed that we can do better. Under the NAIC's best interest standard, insurance producers are required to act in the best interest of the consumer, and they cannot, and this is the key part, and they cannot place their financial interest ahead of the consumer's interests. A producer, as Vice Chair Kachiza Watum said, a producer must satisfy four conduct obligations. The first is the care obligation, which means that the producer must use care, diligence, and skill to have a reasonable belief that the recommended annuity effectively addresses the consumer's financial situation and insurance needs and objectives. And the bill lays out the types of information that the producer must collect from the consumer and the considerations that must be taken into account. The next is the disclosure obligation, and this builds on obligations in current law about the recommended annuity and the different features of the annuity by requiring the producer to disclose whether they are paid by commission or an asset management fee, and then consumers would have to be informed of the right to request further information about the producer's compensation. Third is the conflicts of interest obligation, which it's an NAIC model, but I find that to be an odd name. It should be like avoiding conflicts of interest obligation because that's what it actually is about. It means that producers must identify and avoid or reasonably manage and disclose conflicts of interest. And a material conflict must not cause the producer to put their interests above the consumer's. It's also worth noting that the bill requires insurers to eliminate contests and sale quotas and bonuses based on the sale of a specific annuity because those might result in a conflict of interest. Fourth is the documentation obligation, which requires the producer to document the basis for the recommendation. The bill also builds upon the already robust insurance company supervision requirements and retains the special elevated review of sales involving seniors. It also updates producer training requirements to reflect those new obligations. 21 states thus far have adopted the NAIC model, with many more poised to act this year. The SEC has already implemented a best interest standard for registered variable annuities. So enacting the model will ensure that no matter what type of annuity a consumer is buying, they will receive the same level of strong protection. And thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. I see we have a second testifier as well. Mr. Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce. I believe I saw you here.
Mr. Chair, I am on the Zoom. Thank you.
There you are, yes. Please welcome to the committee, and if you could please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner at the Commerce Department. And I would echo and return Ms. Rowan's thanks to the industry for the collaboration and putting together this bill. We have, with the amendment going on, gotten to a place where the department is supportive of its passage. And Ms. Rowan touched on this in her remarks, so I will be brief, but just drawing members' attention to the language on line 4.16 and 4.17 of the bill. And I think this is the key point, that insurance producers are in their selling of annuities will not be allowed to place their own interests or their own financial well-being in front of the interests of the consumer. And along with the preservation of all of our floor for consumer protections, particularly for seniors in the state, we feel confident that this will allow us to align with most of the rest of the country, make the sale of annuity products standardized across the country, but not lose any of the core protections that we have in Minnesota law for seniors in particular and consumers in general. I'm also happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair, but otherwise I will turn it back over.
Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty. Appreciate your testimony today. Seeing no additional testifiers, I will move to member questions. Any member questions, comments? Okay. Chair Katizawatun, final comments to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think that it's always a good idea to review the statutes and standards that we have in place, and when we can do better to protect consumers, we take action to do so. So I appreciate your support for this bill.
All right, excellent. So with that, Representative Katizawatun renews her motion that House File 4394, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And let's see, Mr. Dockendorf, will you please take the roll?
Yeah, we'll start with Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Vice Chair Katizawatun.
Aye.
Katizawatun, aye. Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Barr.
Barr, aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Kegel. Representative Kegel. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Listlegard.
Listlegard, aye.
Listlegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Representative Kegel.
All right. Mr. Dockendorf, I wasn't keeping track there. How many ayes was that?
15 ayes and zero nays.
15 ayes and zero nays. All right. So with 15 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and House File 4394, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. All right. With that, back to you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Members, next we have House File 4048 from Representative Rasmussen. Would you like to move your bill, Representative Rasmussen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to start, before I forget, I have an A2 amendment that I would like to move.
All right. So Representative Rasmussen will move House File 4048 to be recommended to be placed on the General Register, but go ahead and move the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A2 amendment, and I want to give a full description of this amendment because it came about from a collaboration between industry and also legal aid, and so I want to make sure it gets recognized today. The A2 amendment addresses an issue that was discussed in a working group led by the Department of Commerce over the interim that examined language barriers in debt collections. The group included consumer advocates like legal aid as well as the collections industry. A number of ideas were floated during this working group's discussion, but most are going to require more dialogue to determine their viability. However, there was one suggestion that's represented in the A2 amendment that can be pursued in the short term and would broadly benefit consumers. The amendment requires a new disclosure form to be prepared by the Department of Commerce and sent to all debtors by collection agencies that will provide information on how to access financial counseling services in English or other languages. And so with that, Madam Chair, just ask for support for the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. So members, any discussion to the A2 amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Rasmussen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time to talk about House File 4048. This legislation is very simple. It will allow debt collection professionals to continue to work from home as they have been doing for the past 2 years since the start of COVID. This bill clarifies a quirk in the existing third-party collection agency licensing structure that does not reasonably provide for individual employees to work from home. The bill makes it clear that the license required for agency operations is not required for each employee's home while maintaining the same standards and regulations required by both federal and state law. This provision was included in the 2021 Department of Commerce bill, and the department remains supportive. We need to pass this bill to make this allowance permanent so collection agencies have the flexibility to allow employees to work from home just like all other similar financial sector employees. With that, Madam Chair, I believe we have a couple testifiers on the bill as well.
Yes, thank you, Representative Rasmussen. First on the list, we have Sarah Strong-Belisle. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Sarah Strong-Belisle with Cook Girard Associates, and I'm here today on behalf of the Great Lakes Credit and Collections Association, which represents debt collection professionals across Minnesota, to ask for your support for House File 4048. The bill would permanently allow third-party collection employees the option to work remotely, something most of them have been doing for the past 2 years because of a COVID-19 peacetime emergency waiver and passage of temporary legislation last session. Due to a unique aspect of Minnesota's third-party debt collection licensing statute that requires agencies to secure a separate and expensive license for each location where an employee works, it's financially prohibitive for collection agency employees to work from home. This puts these workers on unequal footing with other financial service workers, including individuals doing similar work for first-party creditors. This change was included in the 2021 Department of Commerce technical bill, as Representative Rasmussen noted. All laws and regulations, both state and federal, apply regardless of where an employee is conducting their work. For 2 years, collection professionals have demonstrated they're able to perform their duties remotely in a safe and compliant manner. As you all know, workplace flexibility has become a critical concern and highly valued by both businesses and workers. Without a remote work option, third-party collection agencies will be competitively disadvantaged when seeking new workers, and likewise, collection agency employees will be at a disadvantage compared to their peers in similar industries. This bill will eliminate those disadvantages, and we hope you will support its passage. I want to be respectful of the committee's time, and I know Mr. Elwood is also here to speak to the author's amendment, but I do want to note that GLCCA supports the addition of this language. We worked with Legal Aid and the Department of Commerce to craft it, and we believe it will be, provide an important assistance to Minnesotans facing language barriers. Providing this information will help all consumers access resources to better understand their rights and obligations, and that often results in a better resolution for all parties. So I'd like to thank Representative Rasmussen, Mr. Elwood, Mr. Kelly from the department, and Chair Stevenson for all of their work on this and ask for the committee's support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Strong-Belisle. And next we have Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Mr. Elwood, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I'd like to echo Ms. Strong-Belisle's comments. Appreciate Representative Rasmussen including this important amendment, which we strongly support. We did work with Ms. Strong-Belisle and her clients, and appreciate the Department of Commerce. While everybody's described the amendment well, I'd just like to say that not only will this help address, at least take the first step in addressing problems that are exacerbated in the debt collection world for Minnesotans whose language, first language is not English. But also the fact of the matter is that when debtors are connected with credit counseling agencies and working with creditors, the outcomes are invariably better for all parties. So I think this is a really good first step forward, and I would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. We will move to member discussion and questions. And Representative Lucero, I see you already have your hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question would be for the bill author or any of the testifiers. So when I'm thinking of working from home as somebody in IT, as a technologist, I love work from home because it is job security. But when I put on my cybersecurity hat, one of the things I'm always thinking about is those actions that take place within a more controlled environment are sometimes more difficult to control in a home-based environment. So I'm wondering if the bill author or one of the testifiers can just maybe walk us through what does a day in the life of a third-party debt collector look like in terms of what does remote access and what kind of controls are in place? Are they using their home-based machine and having software loaded onto it? Are they remoting into a cloud-based and therefore there is no sensitive information stored on the remote home location, et cetera, et cetera?
Representative Rasmussen, I see you unmuted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucero, for that important question on data security, cybersecurity, when it relates to debt collection. The only thing that I will note is that the bill doesn't change or alter any other state or federal requirements when it comes to these agencies and their licensure. So they would have to continue to meet any standards when it comes to cybersecurity, data protection that they currently have to meet. And then, Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, I would turn it over to Ms. Strong Belial to see if she has any further comments to add on Representative Lucero's workflow questions.
Ms. Strong Belial.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lucero for the question. Yes, each company does things slightly differently, but for the most part, the association actually did poll its members about kind of how they were handling this. And so folks are not working on their home computers. They're working on company-issued hardware and software, and the monitoring is done for the most part the same way that it would be even if they were in the office. The monitoring is often remote. They don't a floor manager isn't able to listen in live to every call that's happening at once, so they're recorded and they're reviewed. We've been told they do use remote communications, video communications with one another. They have regular check-in meetings. So there isn't anything that's being done differently, as Representative Rasmussen said. And we've talked with the Department of Commerce over the past few years now since this has been going on, and no one has seen, an uptick in any issues. So we think it's a pretty reasonable request to let them keep going. I will also just add that similar employees who do similar work for other types of creditors or financial services folks are not do not have any of this restriction about their location, where they're working from. It's really just about this licensing aspect why we have to come in and ask for this extra approval.
Thank you, Ms. Strong Belial. The chair will also note her surprise that Representative Lucero does not have any direct experience as a debt collector, given the myriad of jobs you've shared with us in the past. Any follow-up, Representative Lucero?
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I have many decades of life still ahead of me yet. No, I appreciate that, and thank you for those answers.
Very good. Members, any further discussion or questions? Seeing none. Representative Rasmussen, I'll give you final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate the work from all the stakeholders and the Department of Commerce on getting this bill together. I think it's a common sense fix that we're responding to the new work situations that many individuals desire to have and give some added flexibility while maintaining all the current protections that are afforded by state and federal law. And so with that, Madam Chair, would move that House File 4048 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. I would appreciate member support.
Representative Rasmussen renews his motion that House File 4048 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. And Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Chair Cotiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Barr.
Barr, aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Cagle? Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard?
Lislegard, aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr?
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice?
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Representative O'Driscoll? And Representative Cagle?
There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and House File 4048 as amended is recommended to be placed on the general register. Members, our last House file for the day is 3255. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the bill be placed on the general register.
Chair Stevenson moves that House File 3255 be recommended to be placed on the general register. Chair Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is the Commerce Department technical bill. It contains a number of minor changes in policy developed by the Department of Commerce in consultation with stakeholders. It is a consensus bill. The rule for the technical bill is that if anybody objects, it gets taken out of the technical bill. So it's a very consensus-oriented bill. I see Mr. Kelly is here and has his camera on, which I assume means that he's prepared to talk about what's in the bill, so I defer to him.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Mr. Kelly, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, my name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I don't think I can say better than Chair Stevenson. There's a number of bills that are technical in nature, items in the bill that are technical in nature, and we're just trying to get the statutes cleaned up. We usually run a technical bill every session as staff identify needed updates. I can answer any member questions on the bill if needed.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Members, does anyone have any questions or discussion on House File 3255? Seeing none, Chair Stevenson, any final comments?
It's a good bill. I hope people vote for it. I renew my motion.
Chair Stevenson renews his motion that House File 3255 be recommended to be placed on the general register, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Barr, no.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye.
There being 15 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and House File 3255 is recommended to be placed on the general register. That was our last item of business for the day. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.